You know, this team's ability to, you've mentioned the team's ability to counterpunch, you know, as you guys have in the past weeks. So that gives you pretty good, and not confidence, but good feeling going into the last game.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've shown in the whole year, you know, we've been knocked down and we have the ability to get back up. And here we are, you know, got punched today. We'll get right back. They're a good ball club, man. They're a good team. We'll be ready to go.
What are the general thoughts pitching a do-or-die game tomorrow?
Well, I'm really excited, you know. I think it's a privilege to get this this opportunity pitching postseason one more time. And, you know, after this this loss, it's really tough for us. But, you know, we keep our heads up, and tomorrow we're back strong.
Welcome to the Game 2 Reaction edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, October 3rd. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. And if you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody, here on this Thursday morning. Big Game 3 coming up for the Mets versus the Brewers. I don't know if you shook off the disappointment of last night. Hope you had a chance to join me and my good friend from Subway to Shea, Anthony Rivera, as we've been collaborating on post-game X spaces. Another great space we had last night. Went on for, I think, about 90 minutes. Some great calls, some new listeners. A lot of new people I noticed over on X getting on board with following the Talking Mets podcast. Hopefully, if you're new, welcome to the show. And this won't be very long. Normally, and if you're new to this whole thing, I do a weekly program. And then we spot in with the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And over there, there's some paid content and some free content. There's reaction videos and then some written columns and things like that. But right now, throughout the postseason, which could end as soon as tonight, we're going to be doing the Twitter spaces, Anthony and I, after the game, somewhere between 15 minutes to a half an hour after the ball game. And then I'm going to do a reaction show the morning after, after I have a chance to marinate on the game. And that's why, if you heard Carlos Mendoza after the game, it's really important sometimes to have different types of reaction shows. There's the immediate reaction, which we got to a certain degree, Anthony and I, on the spaces broadcasts. And then there's, okay, here's why Mendoza did this and whatnot and what have you. And I think there was a few things. First, if you listen to the Game 1 reaction, the real thing that the Mets did in Game 1 that they didn't do in Game 2 is execute. I said it was about baseball players making baseball plays in Game 1. Well, it was about baseball players not necessarily coming through in Game 2. You did not see the Mets, who went 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position, leaving 9 runners on base, get the big hit, put up enough of a crooked number that would have put a lot of pressure on Milwaukee. Essentially, Milwaukee was kept in the ballgame. And then you had one of your relievers in the revamped bullpen, the bullpen that Stearns put together back in mid to late July, not able to execute and get the 3 outs. Phil Maton's been shaky. He was shaky on Monday in Atlanta. He was very shaky yesterday in Milwaukee. And away you go with a couple of home runs. The Brewers pulled victory from the jaws of defeat. And here we are for decisive ultimate Game 3. So a few things here. First, I think the theme that we heard on the Spaces broadcast was Pete Alonso. And yes, this could be Pete's final ball game in a Mets uniform. And I'm not going to get deep into Pete's market, whether the Mets should sign Pete, what are the repercussions of letting Alonso walk, Juan Soto, all this other stuff. That's not for today. Today is about Game 3, and it's about the Mets surviving and advancing. But all September, I said, ultimately the Mets are going to have three to four individuals that are going to drive the Mets success. You have the core offensive players, the Lindor, the Pete Alonso, the Nimmos, and things like that. You have the starting pitching that needs to give you 5 to 6 innings of quality baseball. And then it's all going to come down to Diaz in the 9th inning or earlier, as we saw on Monday in Atlanta. And on Wednesday's game two, you didn't really see all three of those things happen. The Mets were not able to put the crooked number up. I think the Pete double play where he tripped over his bat was a killer. He had a chance to redeem himself. Iglesias had a chance to get a big hit. The Mets had plenty of opportunities to, you know, make that a 5-2, 4-1, whatever kind of ball game, and they didn't do it. And when you do that, and when you have a team like Milwaukee that's playing for their baseball lives at home, and we heard on the Spaces broadcast from somebody that was at the game, was in the building, how raucous that crowd was. It's going to be a tough crowd. I still think the Mets playing on the road is better than the tightness that you might see from them at Citi Field. We'll see how that plays out tonight. And, you know, when you keep a team hanging around, I compared it to an NBA game, which I talk about all the time, where you have a chance to put a team away, get up 7, 8, 9, 10 points late, and you don't do it. You don't execute, and you let the other team hang around. And then what happens? You're ahead, you miss a shot, there's a steal, there's a turnover, a missed free throw, and all of a sudden here you are in the final seconds of the ball game. The other team takes a big three-pointer, they hit it. You miss a shot, they come down, hit one, and all of a sudden you look up and you lost. And you're like, wow, I really blew an opportunity. And that's basically what the Mets did last night. First guess, and if you follow me on X at Talking Mets No G, you were there and you saw it. I know, and Mendoza addressed this in the post game where, hey, he had Diaz for one inning. And I wasn't expecting Diaz to go 6 outs. I think that was asking a lot, especially because he was only coming off of one day's rest since the, 40 pitches he had down in Atlanta. But I would have had Edwin go in the 8th, the 1, 2, and 3. And I know what Mendoza said, hey, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they're all good hitters, 1 through 9. And he's not wrong there. But I think the closer you get to the final 3 outs, I think mentally it would have been tougher for Milwaukee. There'll be more pressure. Yes, there's pressure in the 8th inning when you're down by a run, but you still have a lot of time. You still have 6 outs to play with. And in a lot of ways, Maton, who's been very good since he came over from Tampa, he's not a guy like Stanek, like Diaz, that blows people away, or even like Reed Garrett, who throws really hard. He's a finesse guy. He's a guy that requires location, deception, with maybe a little bit of a funky movement. And he had none of that on Tuesday night. And I didn't feel good about that. Chirio has been really tough. Hit a home run to lead off the ball game earlier, and he didn't have it. Now, I know he said in the post game that it was about location and he felt good about his stuff, so be it. And the one thing about Mendoza, once he establishes who his guys are, and Maton is his 8th inning guy, I don't think he's going to deviate from that. I know there was some talk, why didn't he go a 2nd inning with Stanek? Well, the up and the down is the part that we really don't know about with pitchers that come out of the bullpen. It's tough when they get up, they warm up, they have a successful inning, then they go sit down for whoever how long they sit down, depending on what the offense does, and then they get back up. Not every reliever, most of them aren't used to it. Not every reliever is good for it, and I'm sure there's analytics or things that Hefner and Mendoza already know that indicate who's good at that and who's not, and I think that might have played into why Stanek, who didn't pitch a lot in the 7th, they didn't do that with him. They're also looking towards, hey, I'm going to maybe need this guy tomorrow. Do I want to burn it 100% on this situation when I have a guy that is somewhat rested in Maton? So I would have started Diaz in the 8th and then try to figure out the 9th. But ultimately, that's not what they did, and the Mets lost. So, you know, you move on, and you are now into the ultimate game. There's no use crying over spilled milk. Pete didn't execute. The Mets' offense didn't put up enough to really put the chokehold on Milwaukee. Maton didn't get the job done to hand the ball to Diaz. The formula, which has been in place since day one when the Mets opened up the season against the Brewers, was right there for them to execute, and they didn't execute it. They executed it in Game 1. They did not execute it in Game 2. And now they're in a winner-take-all Game 3 with a veteran Jose Quintana. And I'll say this, for those who are concerned or nervous about Quintana, go back and look at the box score from Game 1 of the 2022 Wild Card Series, St. Louis and Philadelphia. Quintana matched Zach Wheeler pitch for pitch into the sixth inning that day. It was the Cardinals bullpen that blew a lead in the ninth inning and really got the Phillies started on their run that year. Quintana was acquired from the Pirates by the Cardinals down the stretch that year, and he was a big reason. He was basically an ace for St. Louis of why they got into the postseason that year. And when the Mets signed him, I remember because I didn't have a lot of exposure to him, not following the Cardinals late that year and what have you. And my first reaction was yuck. I was like, but I wanted Chris Bassett. And that's another story that we've talked about a lot for another day. But as you started to look at Quintana, look at his resume. He's been around the park here a long time. He may not be sexy. He may not be an ace, quote unquote, but he's had a solid career. He's pitched in big ball games. He's a touch and feel guy. He was big down the stretch for the Mets. I mean, what did he go, 20-something innings without giving up a run? And he's a veteran, and when you start to look at these decisive games, especially with the Mets who don't have a de facto ace like Gerrit Cole, you look at where the Mets were on opening day, and if I had told you the Mets have a decisive game in the postseason, Senga's not an option because he's hurt, who would you say? You wouldn't say McGill. You wouldn't say Peterson. You sure as hell on April 1st wouldn't say Manaea. Who would you say? You probably would say Quintana. I don't even know if you'd say Severino because he was coming off such a bad year with the Yankees. So in a lot of ways, this is the guy that at the beginning of the year, if you had to put the ball in someone's hand to get you a quality start, to get you started on the formula, which is get me to the sixth inning, get me a quality start. Could he keep the Brewers to a couple of runs? Could he do better than six innings, three runs? Because Milwaukee... And what Milwaukee really, in a lot of ways, because their starting pitching is not so great, Tobias Myers is a guy that has only gone through the lineup a couple of times in his last few starts. We'll see what Pat Murphy does with Myers. And statistically, from an ERA plus standpoint, this 25-year-old rookie is their best starting pitcher. He's better than Freddie Peralta. Now, I think that that's debatable when you start to look at stuff and resume and things like that. So the Mets have their work cut out for them because they have a pretty good starting pitcher, I think better than Montas. They don't have house money where they could lose a game like they had in game one with Peralta, where you say, hey, let's try to get to Peralta and see where this goes and then come back and get him game two. And when the Brewers get into their bullpen, you're actually playing into their strength because up and down, whether it's Koenig or McGill or Piamps or, Devin Williams, of course, who's going to be closing out ball games here, they are extremely tough. I mean, they shut the Mets down with a bullpen game on Saturday. So you're playing, and even former National Joe Ross, who is a scrap heap guy that's done very well and pitched well for them again last night. So tonight, the Mets are going to have to find a way to get to Tobias Myers. I think playing ahead is critically important. Quintana's got to keep him in the game. He's got to be able to give them what Manaea gave them, maybe 5 to 6 innings. And then you get it over to the bullpen. And the bridge, what does the bridge look like tonight? Will Jose Buto play the two-inning bridge like he did on Monday? I think there's a strong possibility for that. I know he went to Reed Garrett early today. Reed Garrett, to me, is a guy, when he's healthy, he's been really good, but he's a guy that always concerns you. Stanek, I'm assuming, will be available. And the real question here, and this is what it really comes down to, and I've said this over and over and over again, and I'm going to say it again this morning. You paid $100 million a couple of years ago for the closer. The closer gets $20 million a year. He was the highest paid closer for a hot minute. I think it's now Hader, who ironically blew a save himself or blew a game late himself. This is why you pay him. You don't pay Diaz, per se, that kind of money to get you outs in May and June. You could find a closer to get you through and make the playoffs, make the regular season exciting, that doesn't need $20 million a year. You could probably find someone in your organization that could do a good enough job most nights to close ball games to get you to the postseason in a 3-wild card scenario. You cannot win a championship just with any closer. You can't. And that's why Edwin Diaz was signed. That was the intent of signing him to the 5-year deal. This is why We've always been so excited about Diaz from the day he was acquired in the Robinson Cano trade because of his electric stuff, because for the first time in a long time, maybe even better than the Johnny Franco days, the Mets had someone who, from a pure stuff standpoint, could dominate and keep the ball off the bats and be there. I don't want to say Mariano Rivera, but maybe the best closer in franchise history and close out the deal. And the Mets have had some good closers in their history. Jesse Orozco, Randy Myers, John Franco. Armando Benitez wasn't bad at all for a couple of years there. And obviously Billy Wagner and what have you. And Jerry's Familia had a good run. But they've never had a lockdown guy. And tonight, if the Mets have a lead in the eighth inning, and I know we've debated it, we've talked about it, and what have you, but it's got to be the Diaz that gets them to the finish line. That's why you're paying him. That's what he's here for. He is your best guy in terms of stuff on that entire staff. And if everybody is rested and healthy, and you have to get three outs or four outs or, heck, six outs, because I don't think that's asking a lot from an elite closer, in a must-win ballgame, he's the guy. And I don't want to keep going back to the Yankees and what the Yankees did back in the 90s. Some of you were there watching it. Maybe some of you were too young. But the Yankees were able to get, even when they had guys like Clemens and Cone in their rotation, they were able to, in the seventh inning, sometimes in the sixth, as they got deeper into that playoff run, watch how they played the Mets in the postseason in 2000. Guys like Graham Lloyd and Jeff Nelson and Mike Stanton. And they would be able to go to those guys to get a few bridge outs. But once it got to the eighth inning, it was Mariano. And it was Mariano pretty much from the postseason onward. And even at some points late in September, they would start to get him ramped up to do two innings. Now, I know that you can't ask everybody to be Mariano. And it's not fair. And Diaz is not Mariano. And I don't think Diaz could go six outs like Mariano multiple times in a postseason series. I don't. And I think it's tough asking any reliever to do it night in and night out. But you got to know when you need to do it. And tonight's the night. If the Mets have a lead in the eighth inning, you got to at least try to get more than three outs from Diaz. Maybe six is asking a lot after Monday, and it sounds like he didn't bounce back great from Monday. And Mendoza has admitted that they've babied Diaz quite a bit throughout the season. And it's been an uneven season for Diaz, coming back from a major injury. The suspension, which I think when he was starting to get himself away from the horrible May, he goes out and gets suspended for the sticky stuff and then comes back and has to kind of revamp and re-get back into it. And it really took him till September to do it. And he had a good September. He had five saves. You know, ever since that Arizona debacle and meltdown, he's been great. He's been really, really good. And now's the chance for him to earn that paycheck. We talked about redemption on Monday. We talked about how Lindor pulled him out of the fire. And then he, to his credit, came back in the ninth and got the Mets into the postseason. Well, now he needs to do his part. The Mets need him. The Mets need him to bring this thing home tonight. And I think you're going to see Diaz one way or the other, because if it's a close game and they're a run ahead or a run behind, I think you'll see him eventually, because the Mets are going to want to keep this thing to a one run either way, especially with how good the Milwaukee bullpen is. And that's what it's going to come down to. And we could talk about Alonso and the runners in scoring position and the starters, Manaea not going deep enough. I saw John Harper's column over there at SNY. You know, they pulled Manaea early. The Mets lost because they didn't execute in the eighth inning. The Mets lost because they didn't really have Diaz for more than a few outs. The Mets lost because they just didn't execute. I don't think it was about the manager last night. Yeah, I could argue the eighth inning for Diaz versus the ninth, but they're still going to have to get three outs, and Maton was going to have to be one of those guys, and he didn't have it. And whether that's because he's a pitcher that you can't necessarily rely on to get those three outs automatically, or he didn't have his stuff, or he's overworked, that's a whole different story for another day. The Mets, the players that have gotten them here with 89 wins, that have played at 100-plus win pace since Memorial Day, did not get the job done. And it's as simple as that. And the other thing that maybe it's just part and parcel to how the Mets build bullpens under Stearns, and I think it's a way that they probably will continue to build bullpens, is that they try to have these fungible bullpens and find out who is the right guy at a certain time. There's the early season bullpen, there's the midseason bullpen, and then there's the bullpen that really is supposed to bring you home from July onward, which is the Stanek, Maton, Diaz, Reed, Garrett bullpen that they have now. But the Mets didn't invest in, at the deadline, a lockdown elite setup guy. And maybe that's something they look for in the offseason. It's not a conversation for today because I think Diaz needs that help, because I don't think that he can necessarily go in a big spot more than three outs. And I also think because of his build and because of how he's been used, and we really haven't seen him with a heavy, heavy postseason run usage because they didn't have that long postseason run in 2022 and they didn't make the playoffs before then. So we're really learning about Diaz. Even though he's been here 5 years, we're learning about him for the first time. So there's really no backup closer. There's no guy that you could say, hey, we don't need to use you tonight more than three outs because we got this guy that's going to lock it down. In a lot of ways, the Brewers have a bullpen that the Mets, you really wish they did, because they're far more locked down. But all that doesn't matter, because tonight it's about, can the Mets do what they did in game one and execute? Can they get the ball to Diaz? Can they do enough on the offensive side with Quintana, with the bridge, to get the ball to Diaz? Because I've told you from the start, if the Mets are going to go anywhere this year, if the Mets are going to win series, whether it's this series, the next one against the Phillies, or further and beyond, it's going to come down to Diaz getting those big outs. And if he gets them, the Mets are going to be in a great place. And if he doesn't, it's going to be misery. Now, there's a lot that has to happen before that, because it easily could be Quintana, you know, having nothing and putting them down 4-0 in the first. House of Horrors scenario. But to date, every time the Mets have faced their back against the wall, they've put out a good effort, a good performance, and they've usually won. They did it Monday in Atlanta. They came here under extreme circumstances for game one and won a great ball game on Tuesday. And now they need to finish the deal. They were six outs away from a champagne celebration. It didn't happen. That's yesterday. Move on. You heard Mendoza coming in here. He feels good. Didn't work out. Time to move on. On to the next. He's really good about keeping this team focused. Not too high, not too low, and staying on point. A lot of veterans in that locker room. Milwaukee's a hungry team. They're playing at home. But they're not a great team. They're not a perfect team. They're a grinding team. They're a team that comes at you. They're a team that's going to throw the kitchen sink at you from an effort standpoint. So they got their work cut out for them tonight. But the Mets are a pretty good team too. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what transpires. What's going to happen tonight? For sure, Anthony Rivera, Subway Deshaies, Mike Silva, Talking Mets Podcast will be joining all of you on X on our Spaces post-game. So get ready for that. If you're not on X, sign up. At Talking Mets No G, at Subway Deshaies. Those are our handles on X. And of course, I'll be giving you a reaction podcast in the morning, hopefully from a champagne-soaked Talking Mets studios, as the Mets, hopefully, will be talking about a great Game 3 win and a great matchup and a ticket to Citizens Bank Park in the Phillies on, I believe it'll be Saturday afternoon. So thanks everybody here on this Thursday morning for tuning in as we recap game two and look forward to game three. You could check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on X, as I said, at TalkingMetsNoG, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks of the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Buckle up for a winner take all game three. Relax until then. See you tonight. Thanks for joining me this morning, everybody. For the